And we're back here once again with another episode of the Iron Man Podcast, episode 365 with wow. Mr. 32 Flavors of Nick Weiser, actually. How you doing, man? What's going on?
I'm doing good. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me. I've had a very busy, productive morning, and I was just doing responsible stuff at home. After this, I will be getting ready for recording for my next video. And then, of course, I got Midnight's Edge and Comics Division later tonight on both their respective channels. So how are you, sir?
Doing pretty good. I woke up earlier. I made sure to edit the video that I did with Mike Barron.
Oh, nice. Because
Mike Barron couldn't end up staying for the whole hour like he did last time. So I just cut out the part where I did the little intro of what episode of the Iron Man podcast number it was. Cut out that. And I was like, you know what? I'll just upload this for a separate video, actually. And going to be doing, getting back on my grind of doing like news videos, actually. I really, really enjoy doing news videos because I can keep myself in the know on everything like I did before. It's not like I wasn't in the know, but I feel like I can give information to people that might not be in the know because they have like jobs and a life that they won't be able to receive the information that we are like, you know, privy to. So I wrote down like every article I wanted to cover, which is there's a lot in there. And I'm going to go through them one by one, picking them all off one by one. That's my problem. I let all the news like pile up on me and then I just wasn't able to get to it. And I felt like it was super overwhelming, but you know, it doesn't matter. You got to get to it when you get to it. And I feel like sometimes with like news videos, it's better to kind of give your opinion a little bit afterwards because, you know, you can have a more level-headed thought, thorough opinion over it, you know?
Oh, haven't I learned that, especially in the last 4 or 5 years. It's one of those things where you see something that seems a little crazy, and for the average human being gets that really strong emotional reaction. I guess you could say, have that instant knee-jerk reaction, but then as I started noticing more and more, and then something completely different would happen later that would change the context of everything, now I've seen so much of it, it's not like kind of desensitized me a little bit, but it's also gotten me in this mode of just wait. Because I know, especially if we're within our sphere, we have seen several outcomes be different once we see a lot of things unfold, whether it's in the pop culture sense or even the political sense. We have seen a lot change when details are added. It's wild. So yeah, I've had to definitely train myself into that, but it's worked out well. I definitely don't go crazy like I probably used to, let's just say pre-2019.
So, oh yeah, yeah, because I had a previous YouTube channel where I had like almost 4,000 subs, and YouTube took that channel down because, you know, liberals, you know, YouTube censors, and this was a second channel that I built up for like League of Legends stuff, but then I lost that main channel, so I just made this one my main one where I'm just gonna do everything. I don't care about the algorithm. Who cares anymore? People will come if they come.
Yeah, fuck algorithm.
Video.
Yep.
And so I thought to myself, you know what? Let's get it going. You know, like people. And then that's the thing with like doing, you know, YouTube is like, people that have been doing it for so long. I've been doing this since like 2015. I remember back. Oh my god. I would say the most heinous shit on my videos. I'm like, you guys are all fucking retards. I don't know why you keep doing this stuff. People actually liked it. I have no clue why they want a raging black man telling you you're fucking retarded. But people said, there was one time I think I said, I'd rather bend your wife over and fuck her than buy these cards at these prices. He said he heard that in his videos when he was listening to me on his, like, his earbuds or whatever. And he accidentally set them down. And I said that out loud in front of people. They were like, this guy fucking retarded? So I want to ask you this. How was your life growing up, actually?
Oh, man. It was all over
the place. One of those white guy lifestyles where you were like, you grew up, you eventually came, you had music, and it was a part of your life, and you became a rock star, and you're part of like Nirvana or something, and then, you know, part of the music industry.
It has been a roller coaster. To be fair and honest, I was actually born in Chicago, and I wasn't one of those people where it was just like, oh, well, I'm from Chicago, but really I live 100 miles away from Chicago. Like, I was born and lived in Chicago, and then I actually went to the burbs when I was 10 because, you know, we don't really have much of a say of where our life goes when we're 10 years old. That's how that shit works. And I did there up until I graduated high school, and then I went back to Chicago, and I did basically a second era of Chicago there. And then I came back to the burbs within the last 6-7 years. And it's probably the best move in retrospect. At the time, I was mad. But when dead life hit, it was just like, I can't stay in the city. And at the time, I was, like, upset, but I knew it was, like, necessary in the sense of, like, safety, I guess, for the children and the neighborhood. But, man, then you could say more recent years happened, the last 4 or 5 years. You're like, wow, okay. I was thinking in retrospect, I made a good decision, but then I saw 2020, 2021 play. Now I realize I made a really good decision in retrospect. So, yeah, I've been all over the place. I did high school and middle school in the burbs. The elementary years were in the Chicago area. And I've been all over the place. I've been all over the geek sphere with comic books in particular. I've been all over the metal stuff as well in Chicago and in the burbs. I've been in bands before. And then around the 2010s, I was doing reviews for a channel called Digital Tour Bus. And they were a website that also had a YouTube channel. And they would basically, they give you like, the lowdown was like in someone's a band's RV or a band's tour bus. And they had that portion. I did the portion where I went to the shows and did the reviews for shows as a columnist. So I did the writing portion. And as the channel was growing, the business is growing. The problem was the review site was not growing. The reason why the review site was not growing is because of all the columnists, I was the only one showing up to them. So it don't matter when I'm the only one showing up, because if all the other guys ain't showing up, this was like, okay, well, he's like, I'm going to can this section because, you know, it's nothing against you. Everyone else is, you know, this is the thing that's doing the least best on my channel. And unfortunately, what you're doing is not balancing. And I get it from a business point. You want to capitalize on what's growing. And you kind of sometimes have to do away with what's not. So I got it. I wasn't even mad at him for him. I was like, I get it. Like, it sucked, but I totally, like, I got it. And there was no hard feelings about it. And then, you know, the dad years did happen, and I was like, okay, I'm going to focus on this for a few years, and then I'm going to try to get back on to something. And I didn't know what. I really didn't know what. And then I discovered Eric July. That was my
discovered first... a black man?
Yeah. What? Yeah. Eric July was my discovery.
The DEI told me they're a marginalized group of people. You know, how did you discover him? I don't know.
I think it was one of his first videos was when the first Captain Marvel movie was coming out. Oh, when the MCU still had a lot of goodwill amongst fans. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was a sliver of skepticism with the first Captain Marvel movie. And I remember like hearing what he had to say about this movie. It really like piqued my interest because it wasn't just that a black man was saying these things. I feel like almost no one in the Chicago area, or even in, of course, a lesser extent, the suburbs of Illinois, no one was saying the things he was saying. So it was a really fresh take. And like Chicago is an echo chamber, and I mean a very deep, far left echo chamber. And in all fairness, even to people who live out there, you don't really know it unless you get out. And it was one of those things, once again, I didn't realize for about a year after I left the city, I didn't really understand how bad the echo chamber was. It's so deeply entrenched in Chicago that it's almost like you're aware that other points of view don't even exist. Like, not even like a center point of view even exists. It's like one of those, like, yeah, it's like it's almost like a myth type of thing. I realized how bad it was. So hearing everything Eric July had to say was like really, whoa. And I went down the well, watched all his videos on the X-Men, social justice. I saw the libertarian stuff. And I learned about being a libertarian from him. What libertarianism was, I was clueless, had no idea. So I learned a lot of that through him. And I was like, holy crap. Now there's people out there who had, I guess you could say, my skepticism. And though I had skepticism, I didn't fully understand it. Going through his stuff and some of the other guys like your boy Zach, it helped me understand what was going on, and it made sense. It really made a lot of sense. And then I'd say around early 2020, right before the government response to the thing, I thought to myself, that's it. That's what I want to do with my life. I want to do a YouTube channel. That's it. I knew it. I knew right then and there after going through a lot of Eric July's content. And then I discovered he did a oddly, how really weirdly appropriately timed. I discovered he's doing a Four Cannon Slate podcast with Nerdrotic, which is really odd because he's doing that right now as we're speaking, literally with Nerdrotic. That's really weird. Really weird.
Two on the nose, man. That really is. Hold on, a black guy and a white guy doing it. So I guess are you saying we're like the spiritual successors of them?
Right. I'm wondering now. I really wonder. Oh man. I remember being blown away by what Gary said, because he worked in a comic shop, and I understood a lot of perspective because I've been around comic shops for many years of my life. It's been a very dominant part of my life, really, really dominant. And I was like, okay, these two guys, I really like what they're doing. I want to get a channel going. And then I saw Dave Portnoy from Barstool Sports, and he really like took me for a surprise because, you know, when he was doing his pizza reviews, he had a very like, he's like Stone Cold Steve Austin of sports commentating. He doesn't compromise. He doesn't give a fuck. And he's one of the few guys in the mainstream who really sticks to his guns on his thoughts. And he doesn't shy away. He doesn't apologize. And once again, it was cool to have this wave of guys. I'm like, wow, these guys exist out there. Man, I thought Earth was fucked. So it was really refreshing to have these types of guys in my life. It was refreshing. And that's when I knew I needed to get a channel going. And I started doing some videos around May through September doing videos. And there was an episode of Friday Night Tights. I just kind of like put my name in the chat. And that was a weird thing, too. I'm like, there's a live chat and there's all these people. What is this? It was really crazy for me. And as I saw these people, I kind of just put my name in the chat. I'm like, hey, I'm some guy on YouTube. Can I stream with somebody? And someone actually responded. I couldn't believe that. I was like, what? Someone fucking responded? I remember his name was Jake D. He said, hey, look on my channel. I'll have one of the people plug the channel in this chat. And Eric K, great Wrench King, did that. And I was like, okay, I'm going to email this Jake guy. And I did. We talked. And then I was on his show. He used to do a show called Howling About Entertainment on Sunday evenings. I met him. I met Paulie Latino Slant. This was Paulie's around like 11K subs. At this point, Paulie probably had about 100. I remember that like it was yesterday. Paulie Latino Slant. Met him. I met Clobbering Times. I met a lot of people in the sphere. Matt from Foulball Productions. I met a lot of people. So unfortunately, some of these guys aren't around anymore because they have life situations. But I'm really thankful for all those guys who are helping me get into the sphere, because like Paulie led me to Tom Connors, and you know, Tom Connors Midnight's Edge. Now I'm a regular on Thursday night on the Midnight's Edge After Dark Night Show. Like I did a random show with a random group of panelists saying, okay, cool, we're going to talk about The Mandalorian when season 2 is new. And before I knew it, I was on a show with Comics Division. I remember, like, I shut off my camera. I'm like, is this fucking real? Like, yeah. I watch Comics Division. I watch his channel, his videos, his streams. I watch him on Friday Night Tights, of course. And I'm thinking to myself, I've been on this thing for about not even half a year. Now I'm about to be on a panel of Comics Division. Okay. Keep it cool, Nick. Hold it together. Breathe. And then all of a sudden, I turned my camera mic back on, and I did the show. And then the season concluded, and I actually got a message. One of those moments where it's like you remember what you were doing, who you were with type of moments, like the time and everything. I was talking to my girlfriend. I was like, you know what? That was probably the best, you know, thing I'll ever get out of YouTube. It was a good high, and it was fun to get to hang out with a bigger name like Comics Division. I thought, it's probably never going to top that. It was, and I was happy with that. I was fine. I didn't care. I was like, I'll just keep on going my channel. I'll probably never, I don't think anything's going to get bigger than that. And then not even 2 minutes later, I got a DM from Comics Division himself. And he said, I got to get you on one of my streams. And I looked at my girlfriend. I showed her my phone. I'm like, what? Didn't I just say that a few minutes ago that that's probably the best as I was going to get? She's like, are you going to respond? I'm like, yeah, yeah, I'm going to respond. I'm going to respond. And yeah, we eventually did about 10 days later. We linked up. I did a show. And then all of a sudden, I thought it was never going to get better than that. I thought it was a great show. And then he sent me a link again a week later. I said, hey, if you want to come back, you can. And I came back. And he did it again. And then he did it again. So it's been about a month. And he just said, hey, if you're willing to stay, you're welcome. And now I was just like, holy crud, we are officially off to the races. I met Culture Casino, I met Usher Talks a lot, Toxic Man Flew, a lot of the Dix Division guys. Before I knew it, I went from being in on streams which barely had like 95 people. Before I know, I was up panels on a show that at the time was probably around 100, 150 people. Now Comics shows are around 250 or 300 on his channel. But at the time, I was like, this is nuts. And I'm thinking, okay, I wonder if this will be a good way of getting people hopefully come to my channel and also hang out with these guys. And I was really taking a like these guys. I was talking to them after show, before show. So we were all becoming friends on top of it too.
Yeah.
And then I was starting to do I started finally doing streaming on my channel and people were showing up. I'm like, holy crap, I have more than two views. There's now, and then it became 50 became 75, and then it became 100. And now, like, my Toxic Tuesday and Tuesday night gets anywhere between 300 and 700 views. My comic shop talk show on Friday night, it used to get like 5 views. Now it gets anywhere between 150 and 300 views. Like, I'm not talking about, after it's all said and done. Now, while the shows are live, comic shop talk does probably around 30 to 40 people, and then Toxic Tuesday is between 50 to 100. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, I didn't think any of this was happening. I didn't think I was going to be some guy who's going to be monetized at 1K. I didn't think any of that was going to happen. I was just trying to be on here just to have fun and do something that I was really enjoying doing, making videos, having conversations with people, meeting new people. And that's a high I never get sick of, but I couldn't believe. And it's continued to have gotten bigger. It's really wild. I've been talking with people from some of the bigger spheres and it's continuing to grow. I'm almost at 2K on my YouTube channel. It's wild. If you had told me all this is going to happen 4 years later, I would have never believed I'd be at around 2K setting up shows, setting up bigger shows, having people actually watch my channel. That's like, I was like, cause I was thinking, man, who's going to watch this? Who would watch this? Would I watch? Yeah. So you go through a lot of that second guessing, but people watch things. And somehow they give their time to me. And now I I once got a 2K channel, really successful live streaming, successful videos. I have around 50, 100 channel members consistently every month. I have a great gilded community server. We have a very active, even when I'm not there for a few days, it's active. So it's been a dream. It has been a dream beyond my wildest imagination possible. And I wouldn't change this whole thing for anything. It has been wonderful. And I highly recommend, if you're thinking out there, think about starting a channel, just go for it. Don't think about the subs. Don't think about the algorithm. Just go for it. Have fun. And the rest will happen. And sometimes it may take, some people might pop off. Some people like my buddy, George the Giant Slayer. I met George before he had a YouTube channel. I remember hanging out with him, having drinks with him. We had drinks together. Now he's at like 150K. And it blew my mind because he bulldozed his way in here and it happened. But you can't think of that stuff in terms of success. You got to think he is the right guy, the right place, the right time. And I'm happy for him. And I hope to see him again soon when I do the inevitable Dallas meetup in June. But happy for those guys who succeed like that. And I'm having my fun just having my nice, slow, steady growth along the way. So, yeah, that's the origin story. That's a simplified version of it. There's more, but that's the overview version of it.
So I think the last part that you said is really important to a lot of people, because this is what a lot of people don't understand. And there's various job fields that you could like watch videos on. You could fully pretty much understand what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And there's other job fields you could just observe from a distance and kind of see, okay, that's not really that hard. School for that is probably going to be like a year or two. Guys, YouTube is arguably one of those things where if you don't actually do it, I'm talking like actually put out videos and upload them, you just won't understand it. It's not something that I could really explain to people, because there's so many things. There's so many, how would I phrase this? There's a lot of nuance that goes into a lot of things. Like there's so many ways to understand various things. And that's what a lot of people forget is it, like what you just said there. I'm someone, I've been on the platform since like 2015. It took me a while to get to that 3K mark. A lot of people remember back then. and I was also supplementing my time, building up this one, and I got this one to, like, where it's 700, now it's almost going to be 900 very soon. Hopefully it gets to 1,000 soon. Hopefully, you know, we'll get there eventually. And just getting that done takes time. Like, people think they could just put out one video, they'll be a massive hit, and it's it's not gonna happen. Like, I hate to be that guy, but it's just not gonna happen. You're gonna have to put out more than one video. You're gonna have to just keep improving with each video. Go like, okay, next video I'm gonna improve on this, I'm gonna improve on this. If you didn't like the video, improve on it the next time. You can't just, like, want to do a YouTube channel but not do it because you think whatever other weird abstract reason might not work. It's just, you just have to do it and keep doing it, and you'll just find the success that you're gonna get. That's it. Yeah. It's really all it is.
You're right, but you're right though. And no, I got a great example of someone who did play the long game, and then maybe, I don't know if you know us, but it's something I actually had to learn. So I'm sure you know who Razor Fist is. Rageaholic himself. So he's around 370-some K subscribers. I remember listening to one of his video game streams, and you wouldn't think it, but he said it took him around 3 or 4 years to get to 1K. You wouldn't believe it when you watch his videos. You would think, I could see why that guy popped out the way he did, but the truth is, he didn't. He's been on this, he's been on YouTube since 2008 or 9. You're talking a decade and a half. He put in the grind. And he's super blacklisted. He doesn't think of algorithms. And he's not one of those guys who sticks to one thing on his channel. And he's even said himself that, yeah, maybe if I did stick to one thing, maybe I would have more subs. But he doesn't play it that way. He does what he wants on his own terms. He has obviously a lot of politics videos. He has his Metal Mythos series on bands that he loves. He has his video game streams. He obviously has a lot of, you know, controversial commentary on video games. He's done a decade and a half. He's got a comic book coming out, Ghost of the Badlands. Yeah. He has done a decade and a half. And look at where he's at now. He made that happen. And to me, that's really inspiring to see. Because it's like, if, you know, even if I'm at 15, like 15 years like he is, if I'm at like 20, 30K, I'm happy with that. But if it's any more, then obviously that's gravy. But it shows you guys who had that talent even from the earliest days. And he did. I've seen his oldest videos. He always had it. But it was just one of those things where it took a while for him to really pop off. You wouldn't think. But yeah, stick to your guns with YouTube. Now, if you're someone who really is only into one thing, well, then I guess you do have a good shot of maybe pop off a little quicker. But even if you don't, just have fun with it. Don't make it a work thing. Because if you make it work, you're going to end up resenting it. You'll end up quitting, and you're only gonna see it for the numbers and not for fine-tuning your craft.
Yeah, a lot of people just look at too. A lot of people just look at numbers, and it's like, what? Like, I even ask people, what are you doing this for? Are you doing it for like numbers on a screen? Are you doing it because you actually love doing this, or do you enjoy what you're talking about? Because if you just do it for numbers on a screen, arguably if that's the case, talk about the most popular thing right when it drops, then you see decent numbers. But if people don't, like, people even do that, don't even see decent numbers, you know? That's what I tell you. You got to just do it, whatever you want to do, and just go along for the ride and improve along the way, you know?
Oh, yeah.
The people that aren't successful at doing that don't have bigger channels, or even they don't even get any traction because they're so in their heads thinking about all this other nonsense that doesn't even matter, honestly, you know? It's actually pretty crazy when you look at just like how many people probably in your life that have wanted to do YouTube channels and then tried it and they completely just kind of fell flat on their face because they kept thinking about all this other nonsense that didn't even matter. And it's like, and they would look at yourself and be like, I don't know how he's doing it, because you should keep doing it. That's just that simple. Yeah.
You do keep doing it. And then you have the ones who will start off and maybe they'll have that video that just shoots up that gets a million views. And then they have nothing after that. And it's the one-hit wonder. I don't want to be a one-hit wonder. I'd rather have the steady, slow growth. It's funny, like, as a metalhead, I've come up seeing a lot of bands whom I grown up loving, who I guess you could say they are bigger bands now than they were when they were 20, 30 years ago, because I looked to a lot of them because they played the long game. They didn't blow up. They never had the big record deal. They never had the big song on the radio that blew up. They're bands who just went out there. They did it the old-fashioned way, and they just continue to keep playing, keep recording, and eventually more people throughout time will catch on. And some of these bands have been doing it for 30, 40 years, and they're doing better now. And because they stuck it out, they say, okay, we're going to get better at this throughout time. And eventually the people will come, and people have. It's awesome to see. And I see a lot of that, a lot of the underground music that I like. And that's something I took a lot of inspiration from to say, just keep going. And yeah, I truly do believe if you do apply yourself, a good thing can happen to you. I truly believe that. I feel like that's a universal truth that you just got to stick it out. The thing is, most don't.
Yeah, I've always stuck by that too. If you're in it for the long haul, you'll eventually get something out of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. The first thing we can go to, because I know you're big into music. Yeah. So it was crazy. All yesterday, I was having these music conversations with people that were like indie songwriters. I mean, Mike Barron, who was in the music scene to a certain extent in his older career. The Dr. Gonzo was literally in the music scene, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Were you actually ever officially part of a band? Did you ever go like on tour, or you were just kind of like a indie guy in terms of music?
I've been in a few bands. I was the vocalist, a lyricist. I was the promoter of the band. I did a lot of the business decisions. Yeah, and it was fine. I didn't mind doing it that way. I started off co-writing lyrics, but then I got better at it. To my guitarist was like, dude, you don't need me. I was just like, okay, I'm going to take your word on it, because I knew I could go at him and he would keep me on check if something was not good. And he just said, you're getting good. You don't need me anymore. I was like, okay, I'm going to take your word on it. Yeah, I've been in bands. I've been two or three bands, and I've played shows. I've played with, you know, bands who've been on labels. The biggest show, I did one show around 200 people. Probably the biggest show I did was around 550 people. And that was at a festival type of show. We did that once. We're the odd band out, but I remember we did really good merch at sales at that show, I remember at the time. So yeah, I probably did around 80, maybe 100 shows, somewhere around there. This is really paraphrasing and estimating here. I could be even slightly off, lesser or more, but I've played my fair share of shows, and I've been very entrenched in the scene, and I still talk a little bit about it on my YouTube channel to this day once in a while.
So because you probably grew up the same around time I did, music was such a special thing. Like when a new music video dropped, a new single would drop, listening to the radio, whenever you could get to hear music for any extended period of time, just listening to music was felt so good. Now it kind of feels like music is really, I don't say disposable, but people just don't have that kind of love for it. You know, kind of feels like, oh, yeah, this artist is doing this. It's like, man, if I knew what an artist was coming up with a new single or knew a new music video was coming, I'd be excited. Mm-hmm. It just kind of feels like the enthusiasm, not just even with movies and television, has been kind of not there.
Yeah. There's a lot of similar problems with all these industries. There's a lot of similar problems.
With music, it's just not even there. People just, oh, I'll just get this new song. Bruh, when I was a kid, I could get a new song. Bruh, I was like livid, actually.
there's no simple answer with that. I feel like that's a loaded answer. I don't think there's a simplified version. I think especially now there's two answers. There's the mainstream answer. The mainstream answer is a lot of the mainstream has become very stagnant. Obviously technology is one of the factors. There's also too many middlemen involved, and also there's clearly when I mean middlemen, it's between the labels, it's being the people who work for the band. There's too many heads involved, and they've made a really unsustainable industry. And a lot of it are people who shot themselves in the foot for doing, and a lot of them still keep on repeating the moves. Now, when I saw this was kind of happening, I guess you could say it didn't really affect me as much, because by the time I started noticing those cracks, I was already looking towards the underground when I was getting sick of what was going on in the mainstream. Let's just say like a band that I love was, let's just say they watered down their sound to appeal to a more mainstream crowd. That really made me unhappy. So I'm like, okay, I can't, I'm not going to be in with the tourist crowd, because that was one of the things that drove me nuts was the tourists. So I would seek out other bands who were similar to that, but were a bit lesser known. And that's how I solved that problem. And luckily that problem's kind of been solved since then. So, and there's a little bit of that. Now, I feel like what I dealt with in music, I feel like a lot of people are now dealing with comic books, movies, video games. A lot of people have grown up to being accustomed to what's being put in front of them from the mainstream, which is fine. But because people have gotten so used to it, it's now harder for them to like turn to alternatives per se, because they are so used to the way the mainstream worked that it became like a habit. And we may not intend for it to be a thing, but we are all creatures of habit. I was already ahead in that curve with music, so for me it was a bit easier. And I've had to teach this to my comic book friends. I've had to teach this to my friends on Midnight's Edge with the movies. A lot of these industries, they're not gonna change. They're not. Some of them would much rather go out of business flat out than change. And at the time, some people didn't really understand my cons, but now it seems like that's starting to resonate more. But I think it's great, and I'd say the more the mainstream does, the better it is for all these smaller things to come up and replace it. And when I mean replace it, it doesn't mean to become as big or as mainstreamism. It's just be at a point where you have success and that these things don't have a monopoly on our lives anymore. Because that is the thing. We need to do this all ourselves. No one's going to come into these big industries, try to save these musical acts, these comic book acts. Sure, that'd be nice. It would make for a great story, but it isn't going to happen. You'll get the once in a while oddball story that's good, and that's great, obviously, but for the
most part, it's going to be one good thing out of 30 bad, And that's what happened in the esport industry too. It's a lot of these orgs, I think if you remember a few years back, Overwatch and a lot of these other esports became big, so to speak, even though they were
already. Yep, I remember that. Yeah.
Remember all that venture capital money came in, and then now all these companies are trying to sell off, they're trying to consolidate. I mean, they just shut down the Overwatch League. It's gonna be an open circuit. Because the thing that people aren't gonna understand that you're talking about is a lot of these big movie companies like Warner Brothers, Paramount, Disney, Lionsgate, a lot of these guys, people don't understand. Okay, so they're essentially the investors are sponsors, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. They don't actually use their own money. Let's just say that. They have their own money. They don't like using it.
No, so they don't. They're low information too. They're low, low information voters. Mm-hmm. But carry on.
They sold off so many shares of their company that pretty much the main people, the CEOs that have been appointed, barely have a say at the board at this point. Mm-hmm. People say, how do we know this? I know a lot of things, guys. I've listened to a lot of stuff. Let's just say that. So then you also have a point where the investors are forking up all the money. So remember, when Warner Brothers is having these big movies bomb, they're not losing their own money, people. They're losing someone else's money. That's the game. Mm-hmm. I just lost you a bunch of money. I still have my money in the bank, actually. Yeah. That's why these movie studios thrive off making profit, like most big businesses are. That's why I was surprised to see all these movies that would bomb get sequels. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, you just lost this person a whole shitload of money, especially these other production companies too. Why are these movies getting sequels and then also bombing? Can I factor in a lot of these guys, the investors are pulling out, selling their stock in the company? Because then at that point, now Warner Brothers has to use their own money. Warner Brothers, the biggest example has been a gravy train. Basically, think of it like this. A gravy train has been keeping them afloat for so long. Now that gravy train with AT&T ran out, they're like, oh, we're going to offload this to Discovery. Discovery's their next gravy train. And looking at how the whole DEI thing is happening with that video call that got leaked, I don't know if that gravy train's going to last too long with whatever they're going to produce that's going to not do well, and whatever gravy train's going to pop up. Because how many other gravy trains are these companies going to latch on to? Warner Brothers has been the worst regarding this.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And they've Paramount been doing it.
Literally has a for sale sign. Paramount quite literally has a for sale sign. That company has to get sold. They need a gravy train. Pour in the gravy. Let's get it going. I don't know who's going to buy it. But
no, you're right though. These the industry is like they would much rather burn it all down than the chains because they're so invested.
It's crazy. They're burning other people's money down. That's crazy. Yeah. They're burning their own. Fuck if I'm burning my own money. It's all I'm burning your money. I don't give a fuck. That's how bad the industry is. That's literally grifting. You
know, people too call many middlemen grifting. Involved. There's way too many middlemen involved. And that's why I do appreciate things like, I mean, and this is an obvious but very relevant example, something like the Ripperverse, because they have to get people to want their things, because if they don't, they go under. They have to get people to want their stuff because they don't have outside people who are going to keep them afloat just to keep them going and maintain, you know, a status quo that a lot of these big industries want to maintain. And that's a lot of the things too. A lot of these big industries, they won't shut these things out because they feel like, well, if we do that, that eliminates the, once again, the monopoly that they've had on all these cultures, industries, et cetera, et cetera. I keep telling you, they're willing to burn it all down. It doesn't even matter if there's one guy who does have genuine good intentions who may try to come in and try to change things. He's still going to be overwhelmed by everyone else in front of him because of how infested these things. You can eliminate 50% of the infection, but the infection is still 50% there. And that's a 50% that still also needs to go. And they are not going to wipe the slate clean. I have come to grips with that. That's fine. Maybe once in a while, I'll check out once in a while the oddball thing for the mainstream. But for the most part, I have my eyes on what's going on with guys like Razor Fist and this Ghost of the Badlands. Mike Baron, Florida Man vs. Hogzilla, just arrived in the mail for me today.
I bought Bronze Star from Mike Baron.
Oh, yeah.
The art just looked too good. The art just looked way too good. It's really good. It's really God, good. Man. Florida Man looked... It looks like one of those like parody, crazy, kind of hillbilly movies as a concept for a comic book. I'm probably gonna get that one next or Private American. I don't know yet. So I'll flip a coin on it probably because I couldn't decide because you know Mike pays good for his artists actually.
Yeah,
Mike's
he does.
Artists are great actually. So I want to get to this other thing, which was comic book shop. You do or comic shop talk is what you do.
Yes, sir.
I will say this for a lot of people who don't understand because I do comic content too. So you're gonna know this. Comic book content, guys, because remember how you said before you got with some bigger names to give you some traction? Comic book content, guys, does not do very well, okay?
No.
The only comic book, because whenever I get into a new thing, even with nerd fandom, I like to look through people's videos and see, like, well, what are people generally interested in? Most people are generally interested in comic book hauls, weekly vlogs like the comic book shops, and, like, big breakdown of big events regarding any character from DC, Marvel, or... smaller characters, big events. It's all they're interested in. So if you just did a podcast talking about comic books, that's not going to do well. That's what people are not interested in. But the issue here with that is now since the comic book industry has been going through a lot of issues, you've been seeing like live streams of comic book shows pop off, actually. People want to hear about good comic books that have been going kind of under the radar because a lot of people just don't know that they exist. You actually did a few videos talking about the new Transformer comics that have come out.
Yeah.
I remember looking at the premise and what it was going to be about on League of Comics Geeks, and I was like, that sounds kind of like a hit. It came out. It was a hit. I remember I bought it. I actually bought it. I don't know where it is in there in my room. I re-bought number one. The trade paperback comes out in May, I think.
Yeah, it does. So I think May,
If you guys want to catch up with it, this will save you money. Just wait for the trade. You'll get the first six issues. And then once you get the trade, it's going to be probably around issue seven. Just buy issue seven and you'll be all caught up. That's a way to save you money. Just saying. And Transformers has popped up very hard. The G.I. Joe titles have popped up very hard. Cobra Commander, Duke, I bought those. And which is interesting because it shows that people in the industry can make good stuff that can attract people. It's I don't know. Like, some days they'll make good stuff, and I'm like, oh, I guess we're sold back. And then it's like, they'll make stuff where it's like complete show. It's like, okay, we're burned to the ground. No middle ground anymore, actually.
Nope.
So
there is none.
What was the idea for you making a comic shop talk, actually?
The initial idea, because we've been doing now for 100-something episodes, so we've been doing it since no one's watching, and you are right, for the most part, comic book stuff doesn't do well, but once again, it was a risk I took anyway, and it's a risk that now in the long term has paid off, and it's continuing to pay off, because that was a show absolutely no one was watching, but me and my buddy Pablo, who's, you know, he's part of Midnight's Edge Espanol, he's also one of the editors of their videos, Pablo. me, him, Iron Castle, Clobbering Times. We just decided, you know, let's just go for this. Let's just have fun. Let's just go for it. And yeah, there's no one watched our show, but eventually people started showing up and we're like, holy crap, people are actually watching the show. And it's an actual comic book show, not a show talking about the movies. Like we're talking about once in a while, you know, there'll be some comparisons, but overall is the books are the primary focus and we've grinded it out. And now we have an established crowd that watches every Friday night. We have fun and we go with it. And it's been crazy to think that this show like stuck to its own guns. And now we have an audience and it's a dedicated audience. And we know every Friday night is going to be a fantastic Friday night.
I'm pretty sure you had people that said, hey, man, I don't know if this is going to work out, man.
So many people in my
I had those friends too. I had those friends too. And they're like, man, I don't know, man. I told them, you got to tell them, you got to be on that high copium freaking stash. Oh, I got, I'm doing it. I'm going to keep doing it. You believe me, it's going to work. And then when now you can have a show like that and you can talk about just anything on the show. And you can educate people on comic books. And that's a good thing, actually. Whenever I get caught up on the Transformers stuff, I would love to come on if you ever would have me on.
You're welcome to come on. We have some big Transformers guys who like coming to our show, like my buddy Diesel. He's a big Transformers guy. There's this other guy who's got a channel named The Comic Relief Crusader. He's on Doomcock's show a lot on Wednesday night.
I've had him before. He's a good guy. Yeah,
really good guy. Those dudes, man, put those two dudes and then my weekly panelist, Ironcaster. Mm-hmm. Those guys will pop off on Transformers knowledge. I'll just sit back on my whiskey and let those three talk for the
You guys keep going.
It happens all the time here
when on Tuesday nights when people start talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I never watched that shit or what Firefly, whatever. So whenever someone's talking about like Buffy or anything like Star Trek, I just go mute. I just listen. Because like that's people don't understand. You don't always have to talk as the host. Mm-hmm. If you have a panel and they're having a good conversation, you're just having one of those like free flow.
Let it happen. You gotta let that keep going. When you see there's a good moment there, whether you're an investor or not, you keep that moment going until you start to realize, okay, we now, you know, we've done our stay with it. And yeah, we had a really good moment for like 40 minutes. And like, even though I do like the Transformers, I've been enjoying that current comic book, but I don't have, my knowledge of it is very surface level compared to those guys. These guys are on a whole other level. But for me, that made our show that much better. Mm-hmm. It made our show that much better. So I'm like, all right, I'm enjoying this. I get to kick back, take it easy on my own show, let these guys do the talking. Okay. Yeah, you lean in on those moments. And people were sending super chats left and right. People had great comments. And there are people in the chat who had great insights to add to in the Transformers. So I was just like, man, I'm getting knowledge passed around both ways, panel and chat. Look, all this knowledge that's just coming my way, and I'm enjoying it. It was a great show. And we want to do another one soon where we have a whole a panel for Transformers, because now that the 6th issue came out yesterday, so the first arc is concluded, we want to do a show talking about that first arc. We do want to do a big panel show to talk about that first arc. And I feel like it's definitely one of those comics that's worthy of that because of the buzz that the Energon universe has been getting. And Transformers has been that rare mainstream comic book that's really continuing to shine a light 6 months now into the story. And we're having a great time.
Mm-hmm. I'm so happy that it happened, give or take, because I don't know that much about the Transformers comic book lore universe. Mm-hmm. My knowledge of Transformers is from, good Lord, the animated series Armada. Then I watched a few episodes of Energon. Then I watched, oh God, the movies. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I actually genuinely enjoyed Armada. I thought it was actually pretty good as a kid. I thought it was really, really fucking good. I went back and rewatched it. I was like, this is both are pretty well. There's some really weird stuff in here. Some bad choices there. But I feel like when it comes to like Transformers and G.I. Joe and like those kind of, I'll say not obscure franchises, but they're really big in their own way. People don't really check out the comic books from those series. Like TMNT, the big book that recently happened for them was Last Ronin.
Yeah. A lot of
people talk about how good that was. But people don't really talk about... It's a problem with comics in general, as you would know. Like, most people don't talk about the comics associated with the brand.
No,
they're
they don't.
Always more of like a bastard stepchild kind of thing of it, you know? Oh, and Tom McFarlane is coming up with a Transformer page puncher line coming up in, I think, April, actually. I can't wait to get it. I will definitely be getting it.
I look forward to that. No, yeah. That's why you could see why people have the concern about, are you sure you want to do a show like this? This is a risk. No comic book content doesn't do well. That's why you have to really be good. You have to really do something to make you stand out to get yourself to, not to get you, but to get people who want to watch like your show on Friday night, or even for people, for me to do these videos on these things. You have to really bring it. Like, you have to do something that's going to get people like, comedy shows, but yeah, it is a major risk. It's not lost money. I have many people in our sphere who I know who I feel like personally are good at talking about these things, whether it's on their videos or the streams or both, and they don't do well with the videos. It sucks. It's unfortunate, but you know, I do think there was a sliver of we were very lucky and fortunate, because some of these guys, I feel like some of them are even better than me, admittedly. And I kind of like confused me how some of these shows didn't take off the way we did. But it, once again, we're really lucky. We don't take that for granted. Like I did, obviously, my video last week for Mike Barron's Florida Man versus Hogzilla sequel. I had a lot of fun with that. I'll be doing my next video.
That's soon. What I got to start doing, man. I got to start learning how to do comic book reviews by myself, because I get really nervous when I do anything new by myself, because I've been doing the comic book reviews so far with Professor Savage Chat, and I did one with my friend when we talked about Ultimate Spider-Man number one. So how do you do a comic book review by yourself? Is there like a style you have?
It's changed a few times, and it will continue to, because I like a lot of different ways of things. Sometimes I'll just talk about it, show off some panels. Then there'll be times like when I was doing the Big Game miniseries from Mark Miller that came out. All his Miller World stuff, like, you know, culminate into a big story, which is cool because I've grown up, you know, around a lot of those characters for many years. I remember when Wanted was a new book. I remember when Kick Ass was a new book. So it's just like, and now to know all these characters are now finally going to be in the same story. That was like, cool. And for that one, I did something a little different. And for me, it was special. Each issue, not only do we do them individually, but each issue, I had a panelist join me. And they're from various perspectives. One was someone who was new to Miller World. The other was guys who were moderately knowledgeable. Some guys who were really well seasoned on Miller World comics. Just so I can get, you know, different people's who are all comic fans, but different comic fans' perspectives on Mark Miller and Big Game. And it was cool. Like one of the panels, we had my buddy MVP Max Field von Priestley. I had him on. He's a little bit not as knowledgeable to Mark Miller in that whole world, but now he's hooked. Then I had guys like Wakizashi's Tea House, who's a little bit more recent, but still knowledgeable enough. He's like somewhere in the middle. Then there's my buddy Eric O'Sullivan. He's part of Comics Aficionados on Saturday mornings on Western Thinking Critical's channel. He's very well seasoned on Big Game. And it's cool to talk, shoot the shit with these guys all individually, per individual issue. But what made these comics so special to us, it was fun. We had a great time. Aaron Sparrow as well, him and I and Ironcast, we talked Cobra Commander number one. So yeah, the format changes. It changes. And that's because I'm not really settled on one thing. Now, if I ever get there, yeah, I'll stick with it. But my variations have all done well in terms of views. So it's just like, I'm just going to keep it going. As long as people are listening. And I think I would assume most people are listening, they're probably not watching, and that's fine. As long as people are listening, I think that's more important. If they're doing the housework and they're listening, I think that's fine. Yeah, you probably shouldn't watch the TV anyway. If you want to hear me screaming about taking a shot on screen, that's good. You don't want to see my reaction, that's good. So, but no, we have fun with it, and doing the reviews is fun. And once again, it's a big risk, and you have to be good at it. You have to be really good at it, because yeah, it's easy for people to not watch that stuff. People glance over that stuff because of how the movies have kind of taken away from some of that. I remember when we were doing, I did my channel podcast for The Last Ronin, each individual issue. I ended up finding out that one of the pencilers, Ben Bishop, was listening to our shows a few times. And that was cool. He reached out to me, sent me a message, and he said, "Oh, hey, I really enjoyed the show. Great to hear your guys' enthusiasm about this comic." I thought to myself, holy shit, this guy listened to our show at least two times. Once again, proof that you never know who's out there watching and listening. And that was when the show was not as well known, too. That was like when we did the last one, that's when it was super risky.
What's up, Professor Abistat? Professor Dark, what's up, man? He says, yeah, that's how I consume a lot of my content. Yeah, that's what I told people. A lot of people just consume content by listening to it. They're not like sometimes even visually looking at the screen because mm-hmm. multiple are busy and just putting in earbuds and just going, you know? Mm-hmm. That's why I always tell people, put your podcast out there on podcast platforms. Just even if you just want to put it on Spotify, I don't care. Just put it on Spotify, mm-hmm. you know? It's free. You literally do just people who ask podcasts, type in Anchor for Spotify for podcasters. It was anchor.fm. They got bought by Spotify. You mm-hmm. make an account, you distribute it through them, and they put it on Spotify for you for free. You can make a different spot. You can make a Spotify account through them. Just put your podcast out there. I don't know why people don't want to do that. And this thing is, let's say in a random case, you're not like your channel, but someone's channel is taken down, lose all their episodes of their freaking show. Like I luckily didn't lose one of the shows, the main ones that I was doing. But put your show out there for other people to hear it. There's a big world of people out there that'll listen to your podcast. Just put it out there. I don't know if people are just like, I don't know if people want to listen to this. It's the same logic you apply to YouTube. That wouldn't make any sense. Do the same thing. It's the same, mm-hmm. the same content you're already making, you know? So I'd recommend that to anybody. Put your show out there for other people to hear, you know? Because mm-hmm. there's an audience out there for it. You just have to find it like you did with yours.
Yeah. You got to find it and you got to mm-hmm. really want it. And you know, doing that is, it's kind of like it's that first step. That's the toughest for me. It's kind of like when someone wants to lose weight, mm-hmm. that first step is in my opinion, that's still the toughest step because that's where your first set of mental blocks is. But once you get past those blocks, it's all guns blazing from there. And the only mental blocks I had, I mean, I did question a little bit, would people actually listen and watch this? But I don't know how much I truly meant that. And it wasn't something that really held me back, really. I think what really set me back was probably one of my few mistakes was not starting this stuff sooner. Granted, I know I had some reasoning, letting the children get a few years older. But I do wish, in retrospect, I would have started this sooner. Because I had some, you know, I guess you could say technological limitations, whether it was with the videos or microphone issues. Because, you know, you want to have a good presentable presentation for your show. And I thought to myself, oh, why am I putting those things off? And I did put it off for a few months because if I had started maybe, I don't know, 6 months sooner, who knows, maybe I'd be even further along. I don't know, but it is what it is. I'm way past that now. But yeah, there's probably one thing I wish I could have done differently, start sooner. Because, yeah, I should not let things like, oh, I should have a more professional-looking mic set. Like, if all you have is earbuds, just go for it anyway. If you don't have the best webcam, go for it anyway. If you're not even that good at making videos, go for it anyway. Just click record and just go for it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a nerd guy who actually, that's still all he does to this day. And he has a very successful channel, Sticks Hexenhammer. Dude has 500,000 subs on YouTube. It's not like he edits his videos at all. You watch him click the button to click play, and when he's done talking, you see him click stop. And he doesn't change anything in his videos, and he's at 500,000. Sticks Hexenhammer did it, and there's no editing whatsoever. So it can happen. Like, There's a lot of people worry about if the video is going to look like it's being taken serious or does it look as nice or professional. Don't even let things like that bug you. Just go for it anyways. Not everyone needs to have the flashy intro. People will like you as you are. And I think that's great. It's kind of like if someone likes you early on, it's kind of like they're liking you when you're like a local band and you only have one fan. But that's great because it's not your buddy. Because your buddy's going to tell you that they like you because that's your buddy. Whether they yeah, mean that yeah. or not, that's a whole other conversation. But it's nice when you can actually pull in people who are discovering you because you're a child. Because that's like, oh, crud. People actually like this. That's when it's real. Like, and I had that. Like, I had my friends tell me like, oh yeah, they like this, but I'm like, yeah, but, and I even said to them, like, of course you like it. It's because it's me. But do you actually like it? And, you know, we do have those conversations, but once people start pulling in, like, oh, crud, there's actually genuine listeners. Okay, Nick, get serious now. But have fun. But yeah, it, you know, just go for it. Just go for it. Who cares about technological limitations? Who cares about having the nicest video? Like, even if you're not the best speaker, just go for it anyway. I'd rather have people who are trying to learn how to up their game rather than someone who is super duper professional, but they run on the same five prepared talking points and you don't know if they're being truthful or not, or you don't know if they're saying it because they have to. Like, it just goes to show you, like, I'll take someone who's human over someone who's pretending to be Superman. Because at least with the human, he's trying to come from a place of honesty. Whereas the super duper professional people, yeah, they're good at what they do, but you don't know how much of it is or isn't authentic. And I feel like that's the key thing, is authenticity. And right now, for me, the best currency, and I learned this statement from Robert Meyer Burnett, authenticity is the best currency. And yeah, we are true. In a day and age where that's what we're looking for. Even if you don't completely agree with someone, if you can at least understand the perspective and you can tell it's authentic, I think there's something to really respect and cherish that much more. And in that, versus someone who's saying things because they have to, because it's what's on the script or on the podium.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about is Eric July's Ripaverse, actually. Mm-hmm. So you reviewed, I'm pretty sure you did, you reviewed all his comics so far, Ice Thumb 1, 2, Alpha Corps, and now we just had Yaira come out. They did the back-to-back-to-back-to-back million-dollar campaigns, which is really interesting because this is something really rare in the indie comic space, which is a guy coming out making million-dollar campaigns for his main flagship character, then has hit subsequent back-to-back million-dollar campaigns with two different characters, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, their July detractors and haters are, they're an interesting breed of people. They might be just mentally retarded. Their moms might have literally hated giving birth to these motherfuckers. I know it.
You know, I honestly generally care if people genuinely don't like some, because I do believe in the idea that not everything is for everybody. There's nothing wrong with that. But there is definitely, there are specific breeds where that's their obsession. And honestly, I don't even care if they make a video like where they hate on it. It's like, okay, whatever. To me, at least for me, it's whatever. We've all done it. We're not into like Kathleen Kennedy with Star Wars, but some of these guys, they go on and on almost every single day, it feels like. I'm like, okay, that's a little bit excessive. Because even when Eric July was still doing his monetizing, his hating, he would kind of get it out of its system. He'd have a debate with someone or he'd make a video and then he'd move on to the next thing. And people were saying, well, he did too. I'm like, yeah, he did, but he didn't go after one person excessively day in, day out. This, like, it kind of borders on obsession. And I can't even be like offended by it. I'm kind of more so strangled out by it. I don't get it. Like, I feel like a lot of people, if they just spent the time to apply themselves, maybe they could put out some great. And I know some of them do put out comics, some of them do, but I'm sure they could probably put out even more if they were applying themselves to that rather than stick to hating on this guy. And even if you come out hating him, who cares? Focus on you. Like, you could apply so much more of the hate you apply towards him towards yourself, and you could probably even put out even more product and just making yourself better. Like, if anything, that should inspire you rather than make you resentful. Like, you should let that be your motivator. But yeah, it's really odd, the batch of people who have been this way. But on the flip side, though, it's nice to see that people really do want something. It shows you there is an audience. People are willing to see things out there. The growing number of people who want to see an alternative is growing. And right now, there is a solution being handled with comic books. And it's nice to see Eric July doing that. And I'm happy that he's continuing this thing. The fact that he's got people who are going out there supporting different characters, and people are liking certain books, and I think that's great too. We got to get to a point where we much rather have conversations on which characters we prefer rather than, oh, great, so-and-so's book went down the toilet today. Guess that's a book I won't be buying anymore. I'd rather be having that conversation again. I want to be in a point in my life where we could be debating on, oh, man, no, I prefer this Alpha Corps book over somebody's Florida Man book. I want to have those debates again. I would kind of like when we'd all bicker at comic shots about Hulk.
The big
and
like
Thor.
Big one to be like, yeah. Superman versus Goku. Those are always yeah.
Great conversations. Yeah, and you get heated and you get passionate, but that's just because you're passionate. We don't actually hate you. It's kind of like when someone kind of comes in who's like a normie, like, wow, these guys really hate each other, and then you both the guy who were just arguing, you both look at that third person like, we don't hate each other. This is just how we talk. Like, they're like, oh, I'm staying away from this conversation. And that's fine. I want it to be people who want to be here, whether you're a seasoned reader who's looking for something new, or if you're someone who's brand new, genuinely looking for something to get into, mm-hmm. as long as you want to be here. And right now, I've talked to a lot of people on Gilded, whether it's on My Saver or on Eric July's Gilded. There's a mixture of people who are really seasoned readers, and there's also a whole wave of people who've never read comics before. Some of them who've never even read manga who are reading comics for the first time. And then you have people who are coming into American comics who know manga but are discovering American by reading the Rope of Verse. So you do have, I guess, on a technicality, three different waves of people. But it's great to see people are being invested in having those conversations. And I see theories all the time, and it's fun. And that's how this should be. It's fun. Less bitterness, less being a drama queen. Let's just have more fun with it.
Because mm-hmm. How did you ever get into comic books, actually? Do you remember your first one?
Yes. Now, I don't know in which order, but I do know my first two comics. They're both Spider-Man comics. One of them was a reprint of ASM number one, and the other was the adjective list title, just titled Spider-Man. It was issue 32 or 33. I got that at a 7-Eleven. Because that's where I lived in Chirac still, and that's when they saw a spinner rack. Now, ASM, the reprint, I got as part of the KB Toys, when KB Toys was the thing, when the animated series is hot, they had reprints of some of the comics. And when I get the action figures, they had some of the reprints of the old comics. So those were my first two issues. I can't remember the order of which one came first, but I do know distinctly those were my first two comic books. So Spider-Man is my very first love, and still retains a title of top love to this day. Even if I don't read the current iteration of what's going on with this character from Zeb Wells, I still have the love of many years of great comics, shirts, video games, movies that I have. When I want to go back and look at something old school, I have years of that to be happy with.
That's crazy. Also with comic books, people don't even use this as something to their advantage. Even if you've not been known of like all these other stories that have come out, there's plenty of omnibuses, trade paperbacks of all these older stories before a certain time period. You have just an endless supply of stuff you probably never even consumed. Like, I know a lot of people have said, you know, I've been only getting back issues and stuff. That's not a bad thing. Like, there's plenty there's a huge library of stuff guys, there's infinite amounts of things. I'm just saying, like, there's Superman stories, Green Lantern stories, Batman stories, Spider-Man, X-Men, so much stuff I myself haven't even consumed that I want to read and review for people and go over and have these shows about. Because there's just so much there. Like, new stuff, we can get to that later. There's plenty of old stuff I've never even consumed, you know?
No, and that's the thing. You are dead on with that. One series, The Man Called Nova, Richard Rider Nova. I never read those original Marv Wolfman issues from the late 70s. But I'm like, you know what? This is a good time as ever to do that. We did a show on that. We did a few shows on the Jim Starlin, Adam Warlock comics. And we have been looking into those. I've looked at the original Nightwing issues from Chuck Dixon as well. The original Marv Wolfman, Teen Titans from the A's, the Titans that made the Teen Titans famous, Nightwing, Starfire, Beast Boy, Cyborg, Kid Flash. I've read the first 50 issues of those. It has been a golden age to look at all these stories that I never got to. Maybe some that I was meaning to get to, just kind of overlooked, lost track of time. Or I kind of was at the time like, I'm not too sure about this one, I'll pass. But now I'm giving those books a second shot. So there is that happening. And it's nice because there's things I'm like, wow, why did I pass up on this? This is really damn good. I remember I initially passed on some of Mark Miller's series that, even though I was already a huge fan of Wanted, I liked Reborn with him and Greg Capullo, but I originally missed out on stuff like Starlight. Now I'm like, why did I miss out on Starlight? And I remember at the time, I can't remember if I wasn't interested or I just overlooked it. But now that I have read it, I'm just like, wow, I should have read this when this came out. But it's nice. It's awesome. I've looked into,
I got right here. My buddy Wes, once again from Thinking Critical,
him and I on his Patreon, we have been talking.
Wes is making really great videos. Yeah, oh, I was going to get him on. He said to get him on the show, I have to email him. I just got to just do it.
Email him, and your best shot is doing a morning show with him because he lives.
Oh, that's easy. Yeah.
He lives in the Philippines.
What? So he lives with rappers? He lives with Rapanese people? Good Lord.
Good Lord. He's been there for a while now. So when there's a reason if you notice, like, mm-hmm. his stream is in the morning for a reason because it's basically they're 8 or 9 hours ahead. So for when you or I do a video with him, it's already like midnight or one for him. He is very late nights. So, Wessel, bring it back. Him and I, we have a weekly show we do on his Patreon. Each week we do one Miller World issue and then one individual issue of this comic called Planetary. Planetary is a comic book I've never, ever even heard of. And I honestly, shame on me. And the reason why I say it is because this was written by Warren Ellis, drawn by John Cassaday. And it started in 1999 and ended around 2009. Now, there was gaps where issues were delayed in between. But this is the multiverse before it became so complex, so way convoluted, the way stories of the last 10 to 15 years have really damaged it. Warren, now that I've been reading this, I realize how many guys have been ripping off Planetary, and I had no idea. Planetary is where they really solidified the multiverse concept. And each individual issue is a homage to like a certain thing. Like one issue pays respects to kaiju, another issue pays respects to Japanese Revenge One. Another issue pays homage to The Matrix, the first Matrix movie. This has been fantastic. This is a collected hardcover edition. This has all 27 issues. I took the sleeve off because it just looks way cooler like this. This is released through DC's Wildstorm label. So that's why it's got the DC.
Ooh.
Look, Warren Ellis, John Cassidy.
Yeah.
Dude, this story is a strong recommend. We're currently 9 issues in. We're about to record on Monday morning for issue 10 of this. But yeah, we've been revisiting Planetary because his buddy Doc, who's on a lot of his videos, Doc is a big Warren Ellis fan. And Wes is like, I want to get someone on who's ever read this story. And so he reached out to me, and we've kind of been buddies since doing that. And I'm on his Comics Aficionado shows like once a month as well, Saturday morning. Wes is a really good guy. I'm, once again, another guy I'm glad he took me in. And I've gotten to now cross over with his crowd too. And that's a comic book crowd too. That's a comic book crowd too. Like, if you can tap into that market as well, yeah, there's a lot of networking that goes involved. And I love it. I'm a people person anyway, so doing that stuff is second nature for me. I can just latch on and just go for it. And I think that's probably why it worked out with Comics Division. It's probably why it worked out with Tom Connors from Midnight's Edge. That's probably why it's worked out with Wes from Thinking Critical, because it's just, I'm just very genuine about it. I don't think, I had to get on with this guy because he's a bigger channel. It's going to give me fun. I have a conversation with them. I'm genuine about it. And if something of it comes from that, great. If not, it was fun. Well, it lasted for that moment.
Yeah, I remember that this whole threat, many threads I'm pretty sure you saw where, like, it was last year around, like, October, where it kept popping up of, like, bigger creators and this entitlement thing. And I was like, that is some communistic stuff. This is what I used to think back when I was a smaller creator. It's like, man, these bigger channels don't help us out, and it's all this other bullshit. I used to actually think that, so I know exactly what they're thinking. And people don't understand, bigger creators have a lot of different things they're thinking about compared to what we're doing. Because we're essentially like butt fuck nobodies, essentially, right? So the difference between what they're doing versus what we're doing is massively different, you know? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't ever put themselves in their shoes to understand the things that they have to do to make sure that they stay in the sphere of like what their audience want is much different than what our audiences are going to want. And I think it's, no one's entitled to do anything, you know?
No
one has to do anything for you. It should be the goodness out of their own heart is the reason why they help you.
And even if you know they're not going out of their way to reach out to you, cancel it. It doesn't, because I've seen people try to use the kind of argument, well, it speaks more volumes about them. No, it really doesn't. Maybe those people are saying, hey, I'm not confident enough to get my stuff going yet to have people on. Maybe they're trying to figure out how they still want to operate the channel. Maybe they're trying to make themselves grow. People were a lot of go-getters are always trying to figure out how they can work on bettering themselves. They don't just have time to just, well, do everything in service for everyone. Like, you got to make your channel grow naturally on your own. Now, if you're someone who just wants to write something and you don't have a channel, I think that's fine too. But if people want to get you on out of the kindness of their heart, great. But if they don't want to, that's fine too. There's some people who just don't do it. Sometimes people have a strict thing about who they let to show because maybe they have an audience and they don't want to derail the momentum a show has. I've had people, even tell me, like, behind the scenes, people who listen to my show who don't have a channel, who are just fans, I guess you could say, and they'll tell me, like, they tell me that they're happy that, you know, I'm really protective of who I put on the panel, and it's not anything personal. It's because I know I have a good audience, or I'm loyal to my audience, and if I let anyone through the door, they could be that person who derails the show. So you got to be watchful. Yeah, you want to welcome new people in, but you also got to be mindful at the same time. So it's a two-way thing. We all have our lives, and I still, there's a reason I don't go out my way begging to be on channels, because I'm like, I need to focus on me and my growth for a channel. Well, it doesn't make sense. What happens if, let's just say, I beg to be on three channels and they all say yes. And I'm thinking, okay, that's great. That's awesome. These guys are awesome for me in the audience. And yeah, they are awesome for it. But what happens if I'm not ready for a big show like that? What happens if I am ready for a big show? What if no one checks on my channel after those three shows? And that's true too. You can do many shows and nothing happens from it too. Like, that's also a possibility. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just expect that if you're going to be in front of people, people are automatically going to like jump shit to you. You got, once again, people have to like you. People really have to like you. And that's something I feel like a lot of people need to understand. And I feel like it's also a bit more rewarding doing it this way, because when people are liking you, they're liking you for your show. They're not just saying, okay, well, I'm going to support this guy only because he's a part of so-and-so's channel. Cause if you bring on, let's just say, like, a guest and, you know, new people come because of said guest, was it really worth it to get that short-term win if those people don't come back after so-and-so is a guest? Was it really worth that short-term win? They gain 20 new subs, but they never show up again. Was it really worth it in my eyes? I mean, yeah, it makes my numbers look good in terms of subs, but was it really worth it if they never watch a video or stream ever again? I think at that point, it's not worth it. Like, I remember when we brought Tom Connors on for our first Toxic Tuesday, I thought to myself, like, okay, like, this is great having him on, but is it like, I hope people stick around. And luckily, I was one of the rare lucky people. People did come back when Tom was not around. And it says, oh crap, once again, people actually like this show. Oh yeah. Man, I didn't think that was gonna happen, because you have to keep that in mind too. People may not come back. It's kind of like when I've seen in the local music scene, people go for the band that they know, and it's unfortunate, but a lot of people, they bounce when someone they don't know. So you take a risk sometimes when you bring on those guests, because they may not come back after that.
The other thing to mention there is the thing that you just pointed out, which is very keen, is Ryan brought this up on Friday Night Tights, I think, in an episode last year when this was a big conversation, which is Ryan channel's huge. It has like 280K, almost 300K subs. But Nerdrotic has like almost a million. I'm not saying they do like bad content or anything. I'm just saying, like, Ryan appears on there every Friday, along with Jeremy, along with Chrissy, along with Comics Division. All their channels pale in comparison to Gary's by a pretty significant margin. Now, I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm not saying their content's worse than his. That's not the thing, guys. What I'm saying is, just because even they themselves appear on a bigger person's channel doesn't mean jack shit. You could appear on a person's bigger channel, and you might get a few 5 subs, 20 maybe max, 100, who knows. But after that time, that's it. You know, just because you appear on someone's bigger channel doesn't mean they're going to sub to you. That's not how that works, though. You know, yeah, you might get more eyes, but it doesn't mean anything. You know, it's better if you just put in the work yourself, and if the opportunities arrive for bigger channels to let you on their show, take them. But this is another thing why I know why bigger channels don't let small people on. They can't conversate properly. A lot of people cannot conversate properly. What I mean by that, people, is when you bring someone smaller on, they have these, like, they talk and that's it. They say, like, well, a sentence, a complete sentence, and that's it. They can't even go in full detail about what they're thinking, how they're, what even made them come to that conclusion, why they were thinking it in the first place, what perspective they were looking at to get to that point that they were thinking to tell you. None of that happens. They can't conversate properly. They say, like, how do I phrase it to be nice? They talk in a way that's not really what people want to hear when it comes to shows like that. Just saying, you have to improve at it. You just have to improve at it. But I'm not going to be that person. A lot of people don't want to be that stepping stone for you to improve on, which is fine. You know, basically, like you said, get your shit together and then you can get those opportunities to come on, you know? Let's be honest here. A lot of smaller people aren't there because they want to be there for that bigger person. They want to be there for the audience, which is, that makes you a clout chaser. I'm sorry. That just legitimately makes you a clout chaser. Second, you also, like, why would someone want to bring you on their channel knowing you are just trying to use them for their audience? Like, no one thinks that. I don't want you there. You're not, you don't even care about the person you're talking to. You're like, I'm going to get a lot of subs at this point. It's over. Now I've made it. Like, I would never want you around me. That is what we used to call a user back in the day. And that's not a good person you want around. You want people around you that are generally trying to contribute to your show, talk to you after the show's over, do it weekly with you, bi-weekly, whatever your show format is. You do not want the person there that's just there to use you for your audience. You do not want that. I promise you don't. That's what a lot of these smaller channels don't get. A lot of these guys can barely make a video a week and they want to be on a bigger channel. You're out of your mind. You're fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, no,
I can't believe this. In the same comment you brought up, which was, oh, it says more about them than you. No, that's called someone being a professional. I'm sorry. It's what a bigger channel does. It's not like they're gatekeeping you out. It's like, no, you're not ready yet. I'm saving you from yourself. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something a lot of people don't want to concede to. They don't want to admit that they are possibly wrong about that because they're so emotionally invested in having to be right. And I'm glad, like, you know, I remember even when I listened to the morning show on Midnight's Edge. Now, if you ever watch the morning show, watch the night show, they're two different beasts. The morning show is like, it's almost like a fancy dinner. It's like, guys, you get together, have a glass of wine, pinkies out. But then if you watch the night show, it's like going to the diviest dive bar in New York City. So you're talking about two wild animals. And you know, sometimes I'll comment in the chat, like in the morning show, because, you know, Tom's my boy. Tom and I, we have each other's phone numbers. We talk. We actually know each other. We've met in person. If I'll kind of chat, oh, they should send you a link. I'm like, no, they shouldn't. I appreciate that you want me on that show, but it does not make sense for me to be on the show. Yeah, it'd be more eyes of being in front of me, but the conversation that they're having makes no sense. Once again, I'm happy that people think of me like that. That's great. But I'm just here to be a fan like you guys on the show. Like, it does, especially if they're going over like video data analysis. I have no place in that conversation with Andre, my buddy, Culture Casino, who's a great guy as well. Paul Chatto, Chris Gore. That they have those conversations on that show for a reason. I have no place on that. That makes no sense. I'll stick with my night shift with Tom, where Tom and I can let loose like a bunch of Florida man like ourselves on that show. That's where I fit in. There's a reason I'm put on the night shift. And I like the night shift. If there's a conversation that in the morning ever pops up and it just happens to fit in the context of me being there and they want me on, okay, great. Let's do it. But I'm good right where I am. I'm happy where I am. So, and I don't want to change that. And I could be killing their show. Let's just say they send me the link anyway. I could be the one who derails the show because my perspective doesn't make sense. Even if it's from a counterpoint type of view, or even if I just go on, it's just like, okay, I just exist on the show. I'm taking up space. There could be someone else who could be more qualified for that conversation. That'll make no sense. Makes no sense whatsoever. If you actually think of it, you can name reasons all day why not everything has to be about, you know, so-and-so getting on the next big show. Sometimes it just doesn't need to happen. Sometimes you have no place in the conversation. And that's fine. I have no place in the conversation. I'll admit it.
I tell you, even smaller, if you think these bigger guys or whatever boogeyman you conjure in your head, make your own show then. How about you do that? How about you be the change then? You bring on all those smaller people. And when those smaller people can't even form a sentence properly on your podcast and the episode turns out like complete trash, man, you're going to be like, damn, now I understand what they were talking about. That's what I think needs to happen, man. You do it then. Do it yourself. See what happens. And good luck. Because the more people you try to explain to people on like Twitter, their brains just can't process information at all. I forgot. Not only are people on Twitter retarded, they themselves don't do this. So they wouldn't even know. Like we're like arguing with people that have no experience doing this at all. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know nothing. Why do I care what you have to say? Like, you have people that'll be like, just because this guy promotes other people more, that means he's more valuable than this guy that doesn't promote other people. It's not just like, what level of metric is that? That's fucking retarded. I hate being that guy, but I love doing it sometimes, man. I gotta do it.
Well, by that logic, if your logic is, well, so-and-so puts people on more, so basically you want someone who's just gonna platform you. You're not in it just for the genuine love of growing an audience. You're there because you need someone. You want to use somebody. Technically, you're using them.
You are using them. Yeah, you're literally crowd chasing.
You may not like how it sounds, but you are using it. Because if you're thinking, okay, I did this thing, you know, hey, congratulations. If you did make, like, let's say, a comic, that's great. You know, that's awesome. But go out there and promote. And if you want if you really want to get on big shows, start off with the smaller shows. If you really want to start off, work your way up, because you got to still learn how to form your conversation. Work your way up, and maybe eventually a bigger face will notice you, but you can't demand it as an expectation. There is nothing wrong with genuinely asking for help, but you shouldn't expect it. You shouldn't make an expectation, nor should you make a demand out of it. You just don't do that. There's tons of reasons. Now, some people, if they want to have those people on, that's their prerogative. But sometimes those people don't end up lasting on those shows too. And sometimes those people end up getting kicked out of those shows. Sometimes those people get derailed from those shows. Sometimes those people make the show awkward for some people, especially if they don't have a conversation. They don't know how to, you know, be a panelist and keep the flow going. Mm-hmm. There is an art to this. And it's more than just having a comic.
Oh, the other thing that I'll mention when regarding this is, so basically what a lot of the smaller people that were having this conversation on Twitter, what they really want outside of the stuff we mentioned is artificial propping. What that means is they want a bigger channel to artificially prop them up, get them all these like backers or whatever, even if it does pan out for you. And I'm glad it might pan out for you. But then when you do another campaign and it's not successful, then you realize something. Wait a minute. I was just artificially propped up by this bigger person. The people that actually backed before don't actually give a fuck about what I'm doing, honestly. Nope. That's why people say, make your audience, when you're doing a comic, a YouTube channel, or whatever you're going to do, create that generic audience for yourself. Because that's what a lot of people want. A lot of people just want to be propped up by other people without putting in the actual hard work. You know? That's just what it is. A lot of people are just lazy. And some people have not been lazy in certain aspects, but you can't just be lazy in certain aspects and not lazy in others. This is a full thing you must do. You know, and then a lot of people have to understand blaming every single other person for why you're not successful means nothing, because that's what people do. A lot of people do that. A lot of people constantly blame everybody else but themselves. And it's like, dude, trying to let these other people live rent free in your head, even though they don't even know you exist. And you're mad because they don't want to let you have access to their platform.
It's unfortunate. I can't even get mad at it. It's actually kind of sad, because if a lot of those types, they actually apply themselves, they probably could go somewhere in a few years. And if they gain that audience themselves on their own merits, that's a guaranteed audience you have for when you do something else, whether it's a follow-up comic or follow-up video, follow-up stream down the line, because you earned that audience. You earned that. And I'd rather have a dedicated crowd who's there for me consistently rather than put out the one comic book that got propped up by someone and then those people never come back, or even the video that gets a million views and then all my reviews can barely hit 1,000. I don't want to be that. Those are all one-hit wonders. They're short-term wins. I want to be here still having a channel operating like very steadily. I want to be here like for this journey, and I want that loyalty. I feel the loyalty is far more valuable than the short term win, because I feel the loyalty is the long term win. And
yeah,
I want to have an audience who I know when they come to my video or stream, they're gonna have a good time, they're gonna have fun, and they're gonna want to come back for more.
The last thing I'll say on this, which is the whole, it happened with Eric, because these people were like, man, Eric doesn't promote smaller creators. All right, so let's just start it right here. Who gives a fuck if he does or doesn't? That should have no bearing on you. No one, guys, has to do anything. I could literally wake up, go to work, and do nothing. That's it. That's it. Mm-hmm. People don't have to do anything. Anything. Honestly, you're not even entitled to have parents who love you in your life, okay? If you want to know that philosophical deep with it. So even if he doesn't want to promote any people, who cares? Who cares, honestly? That's just how that works. Some people choose to do it. Some people choose to not do it. Some people choose to do a balance of both. But why is the way you've measured to like someone by how much they promote random non-people? Like, that's just mind-blowingly stupid. Then, even when he did promote people, and there's clear receipts of him doing this, people just ignored them. So what are we at?
They'll change the excuse. They'll change it to, oh, well, so-and-so contributed something to his Ripperverse. I'm like, yeah, some do, and then some don't. But it's selective attention. And so what? You're also now say, let's just say you went from shit-talking his comics to also now the next week he wants to magically put you on, let's just say for Ken's sake. What, are you going to now change your opinion on everything of him? Like, and you know a lot of them would. Or even if they don't change it, they'll just shut up about one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so then it makes me wonder, okay, your liking of things isn't genuine. Your hatred of things isn't genuine. What is genuine about you? I don't know what to believe.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even a human being. You're
it's just a bot.
You're a bot. There's nothing there. And once again, like, it's funny, but it's also sad at the same time, because you don't know what kind of person you're dealing with. And there is something even slightly tragic about it. I can't even take shots at them and make fun of them for it. I feel bad for those types of people, because you're missing out on a big life experience by being this way, rather than having your own successful trials and not so successful trials. But when you get those wins, it makes your wins that much stronger. You gotta learn to have some losses in your life. You can't just have everything be expected. There's no expectation, and there's nothing wrong with people who don't want to put you on. Some people, you know, they have a bigger platform. Maybe their audience doesn't want those types of things. They want people who they feel like they can depend on too. There's also, there's not just the panelists' expectation, but there is also the audience expectation.
Mm-hmm.
That counts too. And we do have to keep our audience in mind when it comes to those things. Because you throw on anyone and they just Florida man your show, that could derail the show. And before you know it, you may lose a sub, you may lose someone who's a freaking super chatter, you lose someone who frequently comments. And a lot of people, when they're about to leave, most people don't make a fuss about it. Most people actually don't. Most people leave quietly. The people, usually the one guy who's being loud about it is that guy who's representing all those people who are, obviously indirectly, is representing all those people who are going to leave quietly. So you may think, oh, well, this is the only guy who actually said something. Yeah, I was like, yeah, he actually said something, but how many people leave quietly? Quite a bit. Most people don't make a fuss about it. So you better, listen to a guy who's saying it, because he could be indirectly, unintentionally speaking for other people, and you might kill your own crowd that way. And then when you go down, climbing uphill is a lot harder climbing back up.
For sure. So yeah.
It's kind of like when you had that bad grade in school. You know, if you held on to that B, everything's smooth sailing. But man, if you get to an F, getting back to a C is tough.
We all
have that life experience, so don't mess with those things. You don't want to mess with those things.
And the last thing that I'll bring up is, I think when it comes to most of the stuff, you guys got people, just smaller creators, have to understand this, okay? Chemistry and synergy work very well with one another. Being on someone's show, if you have no chemistry or synergy with them, it's just not going to feel anything good. The audience can pick it up instantly, you know? The audience will be instantly able to pick it up. And then these other indie creators, they're like, oh, well, rising tides and ships and all that stuff. Well, this thing is, what if I don't want to like help other people? What if I just want to do my own thing? I thought independent indie is supposed to be like, I want to do things on my own. I don't mind if people want to group together and have fun like that. That's no problem. But not everyone should be expected to help someone else out. That's like, why? If I can barely do my own things and I'm supposed to help you, like, fuck it. What are we even doing here? You know? But that was a pretty good, you know, thing we had to say but to small people. Because, like, man, that conversation was so retarded to go through last year. It was like, bro, what are you even doing? Like, so this guy's more valuable because he props up other people compared to this guy who doesn't do it as often. So what are we even, what kind of metrics are those? Like, go outside and touch grass. It's all I'm going to say if you think about that stuff. Mm-hmm. But the last two things I'll ask you, because I know you got to head out of here soon, which is, you got any big plans for your YouTube channel coming up very, very soon?
Within the next week, I'll be putting out a video about showing how Batman did not kill in The Dark Knight Returns. It feels like this rumor that is absolute misinformation pops up every 3 to 5 years. I'm going to lay down the law on that Judge Dredd style and prove that Batman did not kill in The Dark Knight Returns. I don't know why this keeps coming up. I do blame certain movie directors for that. And of course, Comic Shop Talk tomorrow night is going to be fun. It's just going to be guys drinking, shooting the shit, talking comics, drinking booze. And of course, Toxic Tuesday next week, we'll be talking the original 1984 Ghostbusters. And in a few hours, I'll be at Midnight's Edge After Dark with my guy Tom Connors and crew. But hey, it was awesome to chat with you, man. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. Fun. Yeah.
And I'll get you on the Comic Shop show. We'll have a good time there. And you could get rowdy with us too. It'll be like when you used to go to a shop and you'd geek out with friends, and it was just a fun conversation. Before you know it, 3 hours had passed. Like, oh crap, I've been in the shop for 3 hours now.
Yeah. Can't wait to have you on for a second appearance later on during the year, whenever you have some free time. Comics Division, he used to follow me on my other Twitter account that was also suspended because I got a little too spicy on Twitter. Because, you know, this was before Elon Musk bought it, actually. Mm-hmm. So, can you tell him that I would love to talk to him again on a show? Because I had him on a show before. Mm-hmm. It was on my other one-on-one show with the Batman podcast, but I have access to that episode because, you know, obviously I lost that channel. Yeah. So just let him know, hey, MSK would like to, you know, catch up with him, actually.
Okay. I'll let him know tonight. I'll text him in a few minutes. I got his number, so.
Okay. Yeah. And last thing I'll ask you, man, is any shout-outs you want to give to anyone in particular and anything else you want to say before we head out?
Ooh, boy. My buddy Gary, he's got a channel. His channel is well-sized. but he's got a comic book called Vindicated Ink on FundMyComic.com. He has been promoting that comic book, and it's got approval from Mike Baron and Chuck Dixon. More people should be backing that book. He's doing okay. He's not doing great. And he's been putting the hours. He's got a really successful channel at like 10K. Mm-hmm. But he's been trying to promote this comic book, and it's doing okay, but it should be doing better. It should be doing better. And like I said, it's not like he hasn't put in the work. He's earned the work. He's got the approval. So I go look into Vindicated Ink from my buddy Gary Kissel. G-E-R-R-Y. And yes, it is pronounced Gary, not Jerry and Gerald. That's, trust me, look up Vindicated Ink on Fund My Comic. Look up Hojo's The Mythicals issue number 2 as well. Hojo's a great guy, and a great guy who really puts in the time and hours. And he goes everywhere. Even though he don't have a YouTube channel, he'll go on small channels I have no one just to promote his comic book, because he knows that one person is what makes a difference. It isn't about the small short-term one of just having one show to, no, say, hey, there's my claim to fame. I don't have to do any work. No, Hojo's a grinder. And he's also on FundMyComic.com. So I would say I'd recommend those books to check out as far as smaller things. So yeah, look out for those guys and support these books, because we actually have alternatives coming out, and we can keep saying we want alternatives. But if we're not actually trying to support them, and if we like them, talk about them, well, then we're no better than the other side, really, because we could keep putting out videos, and rightfully so, on why these things that we used to love went bad. But if we want to actually be part of the solution, we actually have to commit to that the same way we committed to shredding on properties that we used to love.
Yeah, it's true. I always tell people, hey, you can talk about the news that comes out with a lot of these things, but, you know, if you genuinely see something good in this kind of sphere that you think is good, talk about it. you know? Because then people blame these other, you know, freaking Hollywood people for not talking about these other smaller things. How about that you do it then? Just the Thanos, I'll do it myself.
be the change that you want. If there's a change that you want, be that change. Don't sit around sucking on your thumb waiting for someone to do it. Just do it yourself. It's so much more rewarding that way anyways.
Yes, and it was great to have you on for the first time, man. But we are signing out, guys. We'll see you later today. Have a great day, everyone. Peace. Thank you.